We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
There are two things that are absolutely true. Grandma loves you, and she would never say no to McDonald's. So treat yourself to a Grandma McFlurry with your order today. It's what Grandma would want. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
CeraVe facial moisturizers with SPF protect skin against damaging UV rays and continuously deliver three essential ceramides to help restore skin's protective barrier so it can lock in moisture. Non-greasy, fragrance-free, and won't clog pores? With CeraVe, skin feels hydrated and looks healthy all day. CeraVe facial moisturizers with SPF from the number one dermatologist recommended facial moisturizer brand.
Welcome to the Olive Podcast. I'm Janine, Olive's deputy editor and podcast host, and each week I'll be catching up with fascinating characters from the food world as they share stories, advice, and expertise. I'm delighted to welcome Eleanor Ford to the podcast today. Eleanor is an award-winning food writer, spice expert, and author of four books, Samarkand, Fire Islands, The Nutmeg Trail, and her latest, A Whisper of Cardamom, which we're going to be chatting about today. Welcome, Eleanor. Thanks for coming back to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me back.
I was surprised when I looked to find out it was way back in 2022 when you last came on to talk about The Nutmeg Trail, which was a deep dive into the history of the spice routes. The new book is, in your words, a love story between sugar and spice. What led you to write the book?
It's really a partner book to The Nutmeg Trail because there is so much about spice that I wanted to talk about. And as I was writing The Nutmeg Trail, I had to set some limits for myself. I only wrote about savory food and how spices can be used to enhance that. So this time, this is only sweet food. This is desserts and it's baking. And in terms of the stories throughout the book, last time was far more about the politics, the movement of ingredients, how spices and human history intertwined. And this time I wrote more about culture and how spices have woven into our stories, our mythology, and in particular, how spice and love have become entwined.
I know there's a lot about love in there. There's even an A to Z of aphrodisiac spice in the back of the book. Tell us a little bit about love and spice and how it sort of intertwines.
Well, I think it's because spices were such a special ingredient historically. They had to have come from a faraway journey. Wherever you were in the world, it wasn't where all spices would grow. Yeah. So to have spices come together meant that they'd come on a journey. They were a valuable commodity from somewhere. And often when things are valuable and special, they could be used as love tokens, as offerings. So it is that spices came to be used in wedding ceremonies around the world, brewed up into love potions, given as tokens of love and affection. And I had fun sort of piecing back through world history and looking at different ways, at different times, humans had come to view spices as somehow lovable and lovely.
I think you said in the book that Cleopatra tempted Mark Antony, or was it the other way around, with cardamom?
Absolutely. The greatest love story of all time. And it starts with cardamom, because I think it was Cleopatra who would burn cardamom pods. Imagine the aroma how alluring. And yes, there it is in this great love story.
And cardamom is a particular love of yours, isn't it? I mean, the book's named after it. Where did that come from? Where's that?
The book's named after it. It's very much a book about all spices, but I felt that cardamom's particularly evocative. Its fragrance is so complex and beautiful, and it is a real favourite spice of mine. I think it works so beautifully in cooking, and it ties into so many of these love stories that I was writing about. Yeah. So it seemed fitting to get it in the title.
Could you tell us a few of the love stories?
Absolutely. I have got a whole timeline of human history in the book, which looks at history through the lens of sugar and spice.
Yeah.
And there I've put in lots of little sort of extracts about love. Could I read a few of those,
maybe?
I'll go to just the short entries because some of them get quite long.
And it does go, the timeline's fascinating. It goes over a few pages and it starts back in 50,000 BC. So you've really gone quite deep.
I've gone very far back. But a few little nuggets. Let me see what's short. Maybe I could look at 1000 BC. The Queen of Sheba brings gifts of gold, jewels and spices to King Solomon.
Amazing.
Maybe we could go to the 2nd century. The Kama Sutra is published, promoting aphrodisiacs of warming spices, saffron and sugared milk. 8th century, in the palaces of Indonesia, fresh spices like turmeric and galangal are blended to jamu, bittersweet elixirs drunk by princesses to sustain eternal youth and beauty to serve their kings.
Amazing. We could all do with a bit of that.
And 15th century, in the Middle East, power shifts to the Ottomans and Istanbul becomes the centre of influence as well as confectionery. Baklava, exquisite buttery pastry layered with nuts, sugar syrup and spices, is conceived and refined in Topkapi Palace and spreads throughout the empire.
Wow, those are incredible. It's amazing though that you, and I think you said in the introduction, you know, it is the hand-in-hand sugar and spice, which, of course, you know, inspired the desserts and baking in the book. But sugar had, like, a similar journey in terms of it was rare, so it became a commodity, so it became something that was really precious and used in a similar way.
Absolutely. And at one point in history, sugar itself was counted as a spice because it was seen as this precious commodity. And it's interesting charting the rise of sugar, how it spread around the world, its usage, and because of its specialness, the way that it was used in things like sugar sculptures as a real display of wealth.
Let's talk a little bit about practical things. So what for you does spice bring to baking? Because there's lots of bakes in the book, isn't there?
There is a lot. And I think that spices, being such complex and fragrant ingredients, can add a wonderful dimension to your baking.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be loud and shouty. I mean, it can be. Think about a really fiery gingerbread, how wonderful. But there's also, you can dial the spice right back to just a whisper. And it can add a layer of fragrance that helps brings out the taste of other ingredients.
Yeah.
And you can use spices in a different way, the different flavour profiles that they have, to kind of draw forward different elements, make fruit taste more fruity or chocolate more complex. So you can really play with very subtle spicing to just bring a greater nuance to the whole bake.
Yeah, because you've got in the book, there's a, I mean, there's lots of diagrams and kind of flavour wheels, but right at the beginning, there's a kind of flavor wheel breakdown of every spice in the book, I think, which is the character of the spice, matching it, how to extract it. It's so detailed. How do you go about creating that? Were you literally, because I know you do judging, you do chocolate judging and other food judging, and a lot of that is sitting with a pen and a piece of paper and just trying to kind of break down the elements. Is that how you approach that?
Yes, when I was looking at spices, I was doing tasting myself, seeing what flavours come out, you know, the top notes, the base notes, what you're left lingering with. And I also was looking into the chemicals of spices as well.
Okay.
And seeing what different phytochemicals there are in there and what they are bringing to the spice and how you can temper or change some of those within the way you use the spice as well.
Yeah.
So, yes, I was trying to create really useful information charts that I can refer back to.
I was interested that in the vanilla chapter, you talk about how in baking we actually throw vanilla in without even thinking about it now, and it's become a kind of like one note thing, and that you were saying we should kind of dial back on it and let let some bakes speak for themselves. And then when we use vanilla, kind of really use it in a punchy way. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, I think that vanilla is such a fabulous, complex, exciting ingredient. If you smell a vanilla bean, it's one of the most complex ingredients out there.
Yeah.
Yet vanilla extract, half a teaspoon, appears in so many baking recipes.
I've been guilty of doing it. I just hold my hands up.
And I think that it just makes everything taste a little bit uniform and not so exciting. And vanilla's become this byword for bland, which it shouldn't be, because really that's the opposite of what it is. So what I've tried to do in the Vanilla Traptor is showcase some recipes where vanilla's used a little bit more heavily. There's even a chocolate tort where the whole vanilla bean, the skin and all, is ground in to the recipe. So you get this fruitiness and a really intense taste from the vanilla that is perhaps, you know, challenges the conception that vanilla might be a neutral.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
There are two things that are absolutely true. Grandma loves you, and she would never say no to McDonald's. So treat yourself to a Grandma McFlurry with your order today. It's what Grandma would want. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. eBay gets it, so look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
I just wanted to talk a bit about pairings. So vanilla, what would you... Let's do like pairings for vanilla and maybe some pairings for a couple of other spices as well. So just things that you think are really the absolute top pairings.
Okay. So for vanilla, I think that it's great with rhubarb.
Yeah.
They are a magical combination together. Perhaps vanilla lends itself to something where the palate is clean, like a cream. So it's wonderful to put quite a lot of vanilla into a creme brulee, into a custard, into œuf à la neige, something where the vanilla really has a chance to shine and sing and be the star. But vanilla is also great with chocolate.
Yeah.
I think we know that. And as long as you are using it in enough quantity, then they've both got all of these really different flavour notes that sing well together, and they make each taste more special by pairing them. What other spice should we look at for a flavour pairing? What do you think?
Oh, let's think. Should we pick a random hot, like a lesser used spice maybe? Like coriander. I know you said coriander seed, which I'm interested in because I make a lot of Indian food. So I've always got a big pot of coriander seeds. And the smell is, I think you said, it's quite citrusy, isn't it?
Absolutely. If you breathe in coriander seed, it's got a wonderful citrusy freshness. And when we use it in savoury cooking, we very often toast the seeds, which brings out a more nutty flavour.
Yeah.
But keep them untoasted, and I think they work particularly well in sweet cooking. And pairing, I make a pistachio cake with lemon and coriander seed, and it just is another layer of that bright freshness to help complement the kind of buttery richness of pistachio. And I also think coriander seed is beautiful with fragrant fruit like quince.
Yeah.
It's particularly good. And with honey, with caramel, they can work really beautifully alongside the fragrance of coriander seed.
Yeah. I saw on your Instagram this morning you were talking about, when I was looking on your Instagram this morning, you were talking about cinnamon. Let's do that one because I love cinnamon.
Cinnamon is such a clever ingredient. because although itself it doesn't really taste sweet, it really brings out sweetness in whatever it's paired with. So it is a great ingredient to use in baking because you can dial down the sugar a little and let the cinnamon do the enhancing.
Yeah.
And what would I pair it with? I think that it's really good with nuts, with peanuts, with almonds. It's very nice with sort of sweet fruits like cherry or fig, blueberries, strawberries. It has an affinity with berries. And it's just great with other spices in particular. It really works with nutmeg, cardamom, clove, ginger, allspice.
Yeah.
You know, it features in almost every spice blend because it harmonises really beautifully.
It's a beautiful spice, isn't it? I'm always like extra cinnamon in there. If a recipe says cinnamon, I'm guilty of putting an extra half teaspoon in there. maybe some other spices that I have heard of this one, wattle seed, because I was... reading, it's an indigenous spice to Australia, isn't it, I think?
That's right. It's an amazing flavour. It's roasted during processing, which gives it this delightful coffee-like taste.
Nice.
And it's sort of nutty and almost a little bit smoky, almost like popcorn, perhaps.
Mm.
And that means that it pairs really well with other flavours that have got those profiles, coffee, dark chocolate. I've used it in the book in a chocolate and red wine cake, which is very dark, rich. This is a dinner party cake.
Yeah.
And it's got really bold flavours that sort of all play well off each other.
Yeah. I love that. And you do in the book go on this absolute journey of... I was trying to work out how you came up with all of the recipes in the book. You know, what was your... I'm always really fascinated about process, how you decided.
Well, what was a key message from me is that spicing is where you get to be playful with recipes. In baking in particular, I feel like we're all taught that it's a science. You mustn't mess around with the recipe. You can't play too much with things because you've got to get... the science right to ensure you have a light or squidgy or whatever it is you're after bake. But spicing is where you get to have fun. And it's where you get to make tweaks to recipes and bring your own character to them.
Yeah.
So every recipe in the book, and I've chosen a huge range of my favourite types of cakes, my favourite biscuits, my favourite desserts, and I've given at least two different ways you could spice that recipe, taking it often in quite different flavour directions so that you can see what sings to your palate and what direction you'd like to take it in.
Fab, I love that. I mentioned before about the flavour wheel. I love the fact that within the book, there's loads of diagrams and maps. I love maps.
Me
too. So there's a map of spice origins, like where they, you know, originally coming from. There's a rice pudding variations map. I mean, tell us about that, because I didn't know there were so many rice, but I kind of knew a couple of them.
Well, that was such fun because, well, I had to include a rice pudding, of course.
Yeah.
It's so often a, you know, spiced dish. And I was thinking, where in the world should I include one from?
Yeah.
And the more I looked into it, the more I realised that every region has different variations.
Yeah.
All include rice, all include spice. And how could I possibly whittle it down to one or two or a few options? That, of course, we had to make a map so that you
I
could see
it.
How those flavours translate around the world and who likes what with their rice pudding.
And the one in the book is a gorgeous, I think it's black rice pudding, isn't it, with a coconut?
There is a black rice and coconut rice pudding with black cardamom. And there is also a Norwegian riz cream, which has got cinnamon and green cardamom, I think.
I love that. I was reading the recipe for the black rice pudding, and you make this toasted coconut cream to go on top of it from scratch. That was quite impressive.
Well, it's fun sometimes to experiment, isn't it, with making your own things.
Yeah. There's an interesting... couple of pages about spices and fragrance. Can we talk a bit about that?
Absolutely. I think that when you're eating, there are two main parts. There's taste that happens on your tongue. There's the main, you know, sweetness, heat, umami. There's the things that happen there. But the majority of flavour is actually happening within your olfactory passages. It's what you smell. So fragrance really is what makes food varied and interesting and exciting. And one of the ways that's best to bring fragrance to your food is using spices.
Yeah, love it. And you talked about, this was a really interesting point, and it's not about spice, it's about laundry detergent.
It is. Okay, so it interests me what fragrance we're drawn to,
yeah,
and what reminds us of home and being comfortable. And laundry detergents, so I have learned, around the world are made to evoke a feeling of homeliness, comfort,
like nostalgia. Yeah.
And different fragrances are used in different countries to do that. So, for instance, in France, I believe it's often a lavender fragrance. If you go down to southern Europe, you might get more fruity aromas. In America, it's often a sort of synthetic vanilla smell. So it just shows how the nostalgic, comforting scents that we're drawn to are regional, and there are learned associations. And then I began to think how this really applies to our cooking as well. And there are certain flavours and scents that we're drawn to make us think of home.
Like a Christmassy thing, or for
Absolutely.
Me, you know, like you said, the rice pudding, or like cinnamon to me is such a comfort and flavour, because it kind of reminds me of that home baking that my grandma used to do. Or mixed spice, which is very comforting, isn't it? You know, that you would get in your kind of traditional bakes, hot cross buns, that kind of thing.
You're so right. But go to Nordic countries and it might be licorice that has that same feeling.
Yeah.
Or in the Middle East, it could be flower waters.
Yes.
So it's a really regional thing about what flavours draw you to the home.
Yeah. And the fragrance thing, you had a really neat trick for using chocolate to work out how fragrance works with
yes.
your...
Yes. If you want to think about the difference between this taste and the fragrance that food can bring, a nice trick is to hold your nose and put a square of good dark chocolate in your mouth and just let it sit there for a moment. Taste what you can taste initially, which will probably be the sweetness, perhaps a little bit of bitterness, a little acidity. But then release your nose and suddenly the full flavour will overtake you. And that's when the fragrance receptors are being, you know, activated, and you can really see what a difference it does to that ingredient.
I love that. I know we touched on this in the last podcast we did, but I thought we'd just briefly touch on it again, which is kind of getting the most out of your spices, like drawing the flavour out, keeping them, making sure they don't go horrible old and dusty in a cupboard and become not worth using anymore.
Absolutely. I've written about a few different tricks to making sure that you're getting the best out of your spice, starting with making sure that your spices are fresh. I think we've probably all been guilty of having some spice jars lurking in the back of the cupboard for a long time. And all you need to do is open them up and see what flavour notes you're getting. If it is spicy and interesting and exciting, it's good to use. If it smells a bit musty and fusty, that's what it's going to be bringing to your food.
So you want to be able to open it and get the essence of that spice when you smell it. It should.
Absolutely. Yeah. And ground spices deteriorate much quicker than whole spices.
Yeah.
So if you're buying ground, you'll probably need to replace more often. If you're using some spices like nutmeg, it's great to grate them at the very last moment so that you really get the nuances of flavour rather than just the bittersweet astringency, which is what will stay once it's ground.
Yeah.
But that immediate fragrance is what you get from freshly grinding. And yeah, I've explored lots of different things for different recipes, from what infusing with spices can do, how using them with fats works, how you can use heat to change flavours, all sorts of different ways you can use them in your baking and your sweet cookery to get the most out of the
spice. Do you think it helps to kind of, when you're baking with a spice, to draw it out first, as in, you know, melting it in butter, or I've heard about, you know, soaking it in some kind of alcohol first to kind of draw those flavours out?
I think it really depends on, one, the recipe you're doing, and mainly the effect that you're after.
Oh, okay.
And adding, in general, if you add a spice early into cooking, it kind of can lay some groundwork. It'll sit, you know, it'll mellow in with the other ingredients. It'll be spreading its flavour that way. But then if you add it much towards the end, it'll bring a kind of brighter, sharper freshness. So you can even add the same spice at different points in a recipe.
Oh, so layer it up.
Layering it up. So you could start by, you know, putting in cinnamon, take that. It is drawn out by fat. So if you were to use that in a kind of buttery bake,
yeah,
you could get that flavour really drawn out. But you can also use cinnamon as a dusting spice right at the end. It doesn't need cooking. So you can dust it over and create quite a different effect with the same spice.
Was there a spice that you, at the start of the book, you weren't like maybe a big fan of, or yet you didn't use much, but by the end of the book, you were like, I'm in love with this spice. It's my new thing. It's my new cardamom.
Gosh, to be honest, I don't think there was ever a spice I didn't use much of. I'm guilty of having far too large a spice collection.
As a spice expert, then maybe that's a hard ask. Was there anything you discovered then that was brand new?
Yes, passion berries were new to me.
Okay.
And writing a book about spice and love, as soon as I read about passion berries, I knew I had to source some.
Yeah.
And I can see this is quite a niche ingredient. And I've definitely given spice switches so the recipes don't have to lend on them. But if you do want to get hold of them, they're an amazing Ethiopian berry with a peppery flavor, but also the distinct aroma of passion fruit.
Wow.
So they are sort of bright and fresh, a little bit tangy.
I love that.
That was an exciting discovery.
Let's finish by chatting about a few recipes. One of your fantastic recipes, New Zealand ginger crunch. And I love ginger in all its forms. Tell us a bit about that recipe, because it's quite interesting, isn't it?
The New Zealand ginger crunch is a two-layered bake, a tray bake, with this kind of oaty, rich, gingery bottom. And then a really thick gingery buttercream on top. So it's rich, it's indulgent. You want just a small square, but it's a celebration of ginger, which I love.
Yeah. And one of the showstoppers in the book, and we talked about rhubarb and vanilla, and this is rhubarb and rose pavlova, because this time of year, there isn't really much around in terms of fruit, but we've got that beautiful pink forced rhubarb coming in. So
beautiful pink rhubarb. And I chose a whole lot of pink ingredients for it to go with in this cake. So it's got rose water, it's got pink peppercorns, and it's got pomegranate seeds.
Yeah.
So it's all floral and tart and delightful.
Love that. Okay. So as I said, the book is out, and you can find some of the recipes in our issue of Olive magazine. As I said, I was looking on your Instagram earlier, and you do some really gorgeous little videos of tips and tricks and introducing people to spices and what they can use with them. So is that the best place that people can keep up with what you're doing?
I think it is. Yeah. Thank you.
And that is at Elena Ford Food. Yeah, cool. Okay, well, thanks again for coming to chat to us, Eleanor. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine. Thank you.
That was the Olive Podcast. For more information, go to olivemagazine.com. And don't miss our Little Black Book bonus episodes, where guests give us their latest eating, drinking and travel tips, out every Wednesday.